Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to Overnight America. One more hour together. Ah, the 1 o'clock hour. That's where the crazy Ryan Record gets out. Yeah, it's always that last hour. Plus, I put down an entire box of those Samoa Girl Scout cookies, and man, I'm starting to crash. That was not a good dietary selection. Hey, Scott, what's going on?
Good evening, sir. How are you doing?
Good.
That's the thing about those Girl Scout cookies. They'll sneak back up and get you there, would you?
I made a mistake. Well, the coworker that had the daughter that was collecting, you know, money and all that for it. So they finally got in today, and she said, okay, they're waiting for you. I bought four boxes, two Thin Mints for my wife and two Samoa boxes for me. And
the tag-along guy, the peanut butter man. One, though.
They're pretty good, but I opened it up and ate 1, 2, 3, 4, and then I went to the next row and had another 5, and then I go to the next row and have another 5, and...
Sleeve of Girl Scout cookies.
Yeah, and it's like, before I knew it, the box was gone, and I couldn't help myself, and it was not the greatest of choices, but it's not one that I'll probably replicate, but it's hard to regret it. It was so good. I enjoyed it so much.
You can't regret it, as long as they were good, though.
Yeah. So what's going on, Scott?
Well, my question is about this whole investigation and everything. Is McCabe does look like a broken man on a book tour.
Just
like Comey. And Comey did the same thing. And this was my question about Comey, too, and about the whole FBI itself. You know, you had Salk and his girlfriend. That came out, that leaked, that the FBI was actively going after Trump and...
Plus on top of that, did you see the Lisa Page emails where she was trying to find ways to cover up some of this? They discovered
trying to cover it up, this has been a 2-year investigation on Trump, and there has been absolutely no 2-year one-year investigation even going after these people who work for one of the highest branches of our government.
An open-ended investigation for them to find whatever they can possibly find.
McCabe, that's the thing about Comey, is he was the darling of the Democrats at the time when he came out and said, well, we found that anybody who would actually go out and prosecute her would be kind of crazy out of their minds if they went to prosecute Hillary Clinton for what we found, which didn't take long at all for him to say that.
Yeah.
But then... in her book tour, of course, everybody's got a book tour. Boy, she blamed McCabe up and down, or Comey up and down, for her losing the election.
Yeah,
and that begs the question: you mean to tell me that if Hillary Clinton did sneak into office, one of the first things she wouldn't do would be fire Comey if he almost cost her the election, and she would have been lauded from her side for doing that? Standing up against Comey and the FBI and the. You know, the man, and well, McCabe and Comey, and from the emails that were released that came out, proved that the FBI was in a dysfunctional state, first of all. Second of all, is with all the leaks that happened under Trump's first year there, you know, when people were coming out with all this information saying he did this, and he had to clean house because things were leaking, that...
carryovers from the Obama administration,
You mean to tell me that there wouldn't be one leak from this... from this Mueller investigation yet, with 2 years of investigating going on about Trump, that something wouldn't have been leaked about that already?
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding.
And I think right now, it is time for them to wrap this thing up and say, look, here's what we got, here's what we don't got.
Yeah.
He either did it or he didn't. But
yeah, get it done now. It's better not to carry this over into an election year.
When
things are... because you could do this forever, and if that's ultimately an attack... if they're using this as a way to attack a person, then they would keep it going forever. You got to put an end to it. You got to cap it off.
You're exactly right.
The Senate themselves, when the Senate did their own investigation, 200 some interviews, could find zero evidence against the president. And
zero.
Yeah. So that doesn't get reported by the major news networks. They don't talk about how the crimes committed by Lisa Page. They find these emails that they're trying to cover up.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't they underreport all of these things if they decide to report it at all. And then when this report comes out, who knows how they're going to try to spin it. Yeah.
And, you know, Hillary Clinton never mentioned once in her book that Hillary Clinton lost the election for Hillary Clinton. I remember every day Trump was in another town, another state. Hillary Clinton took Michigan, Pennsylvania, these places for granted. Mm. But with all this information that came out, all he's come up with is, well, so-and-so didn't pay his taxes. And I thought this was supposed to be about Russia, his collusion with Russia.
Uh-huh. And McCabe's still out there trying to say, oh, it's we can't rule out that he's a double agent or whatever for an operative for Russia. This is so ridiculous.
Anything to sell a book, anything.
So ridiculous. All right, Scott, good to hear from you. Well, thanks.
Thank you, sir.
All right, bye. Charlie, how you feeling, Charlie?
Well, hello there.
Yes. You doing all right?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
I heard your road reports last night.
Yeah, we were getting some storms after the Blues game. So as the people that were there to see the Blues win, a big win for them last night, they were out and driving in some pretty rough areas, and the interstates were not being plowed as fast as they would have liked. Yeah.
Well, you can blame your politicians for that.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. People were seeing them. They just weren't seeing them as fast as they should have been plowing these things. We knew it was coming. It just came a lot later than they thought. They were prepared for it, but just maybe they didn't have enough people on the streets. I don't know.
True.
No.
Because from overnight last night, exactly what time, I don't know when, until earlier tonight, last night, 5 inches.
Yeah. Is that what you got up there in Minnesota?
Yep, and I was over doing our neighbor's driveway, but it wasn't as easy as it looked.
You got that snowblower?
No.
No. You're in Minnesota and don't have a snowblower?
No. I'd get me a tractor and do it.
Oh, that'd be a good idea. That'd be a great investment.
Uh-huh. Sit there and grade around, just play around with it.
You could make all kinds of money where you're at with that.
True. But,
you know what? If I remember correctly, you're the type of guy that goes out in the middle of the night to do these things. You'd be out 2 a.m. scraping the pavement, wouldn't you?
Yep.
Yeah. Waking everyone up.
Yep. But I didn't do it yesterday morning at 2, 3 a.m. because it was still coming down good. So I just waited until daylight and then went out and did it. And it was still coming down.
Yeah, we got this deal where yesterday the temperature was right on or below freezing. So it was like right at 31, 32. So when it came down, it wasn't necessarily freezing, but it was still making for poor road conditions because of just the nature of it. And, you know, people were driving slow and they couldn't see the lanes and it was late at night. So that factors into it because it was dark. And yeah, Charlie, you know, it was a bad combination last night. It's better tonight. I'm really, I'm looking forward to Saturday. I'm taking my kid to his first hockey game. So we're going to the Blues or taking on the Boston Bruins. And it's supposed to thunderstorm. And I'm hoping I don't have to walk to the arena in rain. That'd be terrible.
If you get there early enough, you may not have to.
Yeah. Well,
if you get there early enough.
Yeah, we'll get there early. It's just trying to leave the arena, like when the game's over, if it's raining and pouring, and you don't want then. It's a day game, so that's nice.
If you can find a parking spot.
I know. Well, our studios are about 3.5 blocks away from the arena, so I can park here at the station and walk over. But if it's raining and thunderstorming, that's going to be a different story.
That's true, but yeah, if you can find you a parking spot at the arena close enough that...
I'm looking forward. You a hockey fan?
Yeah, I listen to your team on the radio.
Oh, you listen to the Blues. That's awesome.
And they played Minnesota, and I missed it. Because the station kept going in and out.
I see. Well,
I read about it. Yeah. I read about it, and you guys down there kicked their butts 4-0.
They've been playing really good lately. Well, they're on that win streak.
I heard that too, that you won about 9 or so, and you were going to keep going.
Yeah, we're up to 11. So tonight, actually, Thursday night. So they got another big one tonight, and then Saturday would be their next game after that. So I hope they can win tonight and keep it rolling.
Yeah, because I heard your team was playing the Anaheim Ducks or so.
That's coming up. They got a road trip, I think, in March over to the West Coast. So there's a couple of late ones in a row. But, yeah,
Wait a minute. It was the, I'm thinking, Montreal or Toronto.
Toronto, they just
one
played. Yeah, they just beat Toronto.
Yeah.
That was a big one.
Yeah, that's the one.
That's the one. Yeah. All right, Charlie, good to hear from you, all right? Try to keep yourself safe out there, all right?
And you do the same, and good luck on the weekend game.
I'm looking forward to it. Have a good night.
And I'll be listening.
Oh, I bet you will. All right, bye.
Bye.
Regular listeners from Minnesota. I love the signal of KMOX. Great whole nother story with Kevin Killeen coming up. If you're a Blues fan, you'll appreciate this. I might have to bring AccuWeather on tomorrow just for the fun of using it for my own gain of figuring out what's going to happen on Saturday. So that's what's happening right now. They're calling for maybe some heavy thunderstorms at times. I'm planning on taking my family to their first Blues game, myself included. It'll be my son's first NHL game. My wife and I have gone to a couple of different NHL games. We've been to a few Columbus Blue Jackets games. I've taken her to some Detroit Red Wing games, but I haven't had a chance to make it to see the Blues yet. And we thought, oh, this will be the right time. We feel our son is old enough where he can make it at least through 2 periods. I hope he can do 2 periods. And I think that the constant action of hockey is going to be enough to get his attention. Like baseball, it's tough. Like you have to put ice cream in front of him, and it's a little bit slow, and he can only take so much as a 4-year-old. So now that he is, well, he was 3 last year in the summer when we went. So now that he's 4, I feel like he's got a pretty good chance. So I'm really looking forward to it. Did you hear this whole nother story from Kevin Killeen? Oh, with the Blues on that great win streak, maybe he has something to do with it.
The following is a true story. I've been called upon to be on standby in case the Blues need assistance. For years now, I've had a secret, an ability verging on a superpower at hockey games. It is because of this power that I stopped going to the games. You see, no matter how long I stay in my seat watching the action, nothing happens on the ice, so I get up and go to the men's room. And without fail, while I am in there taking care of business, I hear the horns. The Blues always score when Kevin Killeen is in the men's room. Sometimes I would only go twice a game, and I prefer to go during the action of the game itself instead of during intermissions because it's too crowded in there, and one can sometimes get bashful bladder when surrounded by Teamsters. KMOX sports producer Michael Anderson says they plan to get me over to the home games for the rest of the season and get me plenty hydrated.
He shoots, he scores! Oh, baby! The Blues and the Leafs!
But no one must know of this when I am at the games. My identity and the purpose of my visit could violate NHL rules. I must appear to be just any other Blues fan in the hallway until I walk into the men's room. And even if I don't have to go, I have to because the team needs me. With a whole nother story, I'm Kevin Killeen.
I like that. The team needs him. The team needs him! Way to go, Kevin Killeen. I'm really looking forward to enjoying my first Blues game. We got a little jersey for my 4-year-old, so he's going to wear his. I'm going to wear my Blues jersey, which I purchased at a family reunion here in the 90s, which I purchased at Grant's Farm. I remember when I was a kid. They have that or at least they used to have it. I don't know if they still do. There was like a little gift shop in there, and we went to the gift shop after seeing the Clydesdale horses, and inside was the Blues jersey I wanted to purchase. I saved money up, and I you know, mowing the lawns, and just in general, I had a little bit of cash, and I had enough money to purchase a jersey, and I saved it because I knew when I was in St. Louis, I wanted to get a Blues jersey in St. Louis. So I purchased it there, and I'm going to get to wear it at the game. It'll be first time I've worn it in St. Louis. Well, actually, no, I take that back. I wore it one time here at the radio station. All right, so I don't know if you saw this one. We're going to, let me talk about this just briefly because it's crazy that people thought this was controversial. I don't think it is at all. And in a little bit, we're going to be joined with Charles Novak. He wrote a book called Home is Everywhere, traveled all across the United States. Pretty fascinating take since in the 1940s, he started doing surveys in different states. And part of the surveying was very important because it's the survey we use today in order for GPS to work. So his work starting back in the 1940s when he was 19 years old, going for decades, is the same geographical surveys we use for maps today. It's pretty fascinating. So we'll talk to him about that. You might have saw this on Fox, or I'm grabbing this one from the New York Post. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said that the ISIS bride, her name is Hoda Muthana, is not a U.S. citizen. So if you remember correctly, she grew up in Alabama, fled to Syria in 2014 to join ISIS. I don't understand the mentality of anyone that would want to go join a terrorist organization, but she did. Went from Alabama overseas, but is now in a refugee camp as she realized she made a terrible mistake. She's begging to be returned and allowed back into the United States. But as far as I'm concerned, if you leave this country to join a terrorist organization that is anti-American, you are not allowed back in. Done. Visa revoked. Your citizenship given up. So that is exactly how Mike Pompeo is treating this sort of thing. He says it's because they're claiming her dad was a diplomat, and the argument is that the children of diplomats, even if they're born in the U.S., are not citizens, is what the lawyer for Miss Hoda Muthana is saying. But Mike Pompeo says not a U.S. citizen, will not be admitted back into the United States. She does not have any legal basis, no valid U.S. passport, no right to a passport, no any visa to travel to the United States. We continue to strongly advise all U.S. citizens not to travel to Syria. Sorry. Not sorry, actually. I'm not sorry at all. Anyone that leaves the country to join a terrorist organization should automatically not be allowed back in for the rest of their life. I don't care if she figured out she made a terrible mistake. Too bad. Too bad. If you're that stupid and that hateful towards the United States, there's no way your regret is going to make up for you trying to join an organization with the pure dedication of trying to continue to be enemies of the United States and do so through violence and tragedy. So good for Mike Pompeo. This should be common sense. I'm glad they're not letting her back in. All right, Charles Novak joining us next. Home is Everywhere. That's the name of his book. We'll learn more about his work next on Overnight America KMOX. Joining us now is the author of Home is Everywhere, the unbelievably true story of one man's journey to map America. Charles Novak, thank you for coming on to KMOX.
Well, thank you for the invitation.
Mapping America. Now, that is a big job. Let's talk about what you write about in your book and what really started your journey to map America.
Well, when I graduated from high school in 1947, there was two of my friends that worked for the Coast and Genetic Survey. And they were home for the weekend, and they said, Charles, how would you like to go to work for the survey? I think they're going to be hiring somebody. And they were working in our area. So I went down to Manhattan, Kansas for an interview, and they hired me on the spot. And that's how I started working with the Coast Survey.
Wow. What year would that have been?
That was 1947.
Wow. And how many years were you mapping?
I spent about 12 years in the field, and then I was assigned to the Kansas City office. And I was on their MARC maintenance program.
Yeah.
And then from there, I went to, I was kind of the assistant to chief of field operations, which run the their field parties.
You know.
And then they closed that office, and then I went back to, I was transferred back to Rockville, Maryland, where the headquarters was. And then I was in charge of maintaining the network of geodetic control.
What goes into mapping the United States?
The Coast and Geodetic Survey, they're responsible for establishing geodetic control all over the United States for basic map making. Mm-hmm. And you establish latitude and longitude points all over the country. And after your survey, what you have a concrete post with a little disc in it. Mm-hmm. And it's And it has latitude and longitude, and if you want information on that, you have to write the office of the Coast State Information Center and find, and they'll send you a copy of that. And with that, you can run your surveys, and you got a check-in point.
Yeah, how many surveys did you end up, I guess, contributing to? I mean, it's, how much geographic area were you credited with?
Well, I worked mostly north and south in the Midwest. A lot of times we'd work in Kansas, Nebraska, Iowa, and then a lot of times in the summertime we'd all be in the northern area. And then in the winter we'd always go south to Texas or someplace where it was warm.
Yeah,
so we could work.
You know, for some reason in my mind, I thought mapping included just the shores. You're just trying to see, you know, the boundaries of the United States. But you're moving all over the United States to map all kinds of different places.
Right, right. You know, there was a basic network that run east-west and north-south. And then what we done, we filled in the areas for map making. Mm-hmm. They could make topographic maps from our surveys.
Yeah.
They'd always want us to put a survey point in every 7.5 minute quadrangle on a topographic map.
Yeah. So the book is Home is Everywhere, the unbelievably true story of one man's journey to map America, and author Charles Novak joining us here. So this data, do we use a lot of this data that you were compiling in our GPSs today?
Yeah. You have to have you know, latitude and longitude, you know, for satellites, missiles, whatever, you know.
How difficult were some of these areas you mapped?
Well, some of them are pretty difficult. Like in Louisiana, you'd have to have steel towers to see over the trees and stuff to another point. Mm-hmm. Most of the points surveyed would be about maybe 10, 12 miles away. And it'd be, you'd have a station would have like a wagon wheel, and you'd turn on the angles of all these stations around the perimeter of your station.
Yeah. Do you ever make it to Missouri?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We worked in Nam Noster, and we were surveying for missile sites around Nam Noster. Mm-hmm. and Whiteman Air Force Base.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like it kept you pretty busy. You must have been traveling a lot.
Well, we traveled about every 30 to 60 days, you know, some other place. Because I traveled, I lived in about 60 different towns, and I was working in about 20 states, I guess.
So you didn't have a home somewhere and just travel to where the job was? You actually moved to where the
moved.
Job was?
We lived in a trailer.
Wow. So you were always on the move then.
Yeah, but it was always, and we moved as a group. It wasn't like we didn't know the people we were moving with, because we worked with them. So you'd move the whole crew, which would be maybe like 35 people.
Wow. That sounds like a circus, the way you guys would travel.
Yeah, it was. And you just moved to a different area, you know, to keep you had to move every 30 days to get per diem. And then they always wanted to move you so you'd be closer to the next job, you know.
Yeah. You had a wife and kid.
Oh, yeah. I had a wife and two kids.
Oh, two kids. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How did they take that?
They liked it. They liked their friends. They had good friends on the family because when they moved, you know, you took all the families with you. So
yeah,
you always had your friends with you.
Oh, wow. That actually is great.
Yeah.
It's not like moving to a new city cold where you don't know anyone.
No,
you're actually moving
no.
with people you know.
No, we used to have, like, our field foreman on our survey team would go ahead and find us a place to stay, you know. A lot of times we'd even have to set up our own trailer camp. The towns would always like to have us come in there because we had that was a different payroll, you know.
Hmm. Yeah.
So they were making money, so they were always happy to see us.
So what would you do for school for the kids?
They just changed school every place we went.
Yeah, so they would just jump in wherever the classroom was?
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, how did they progress in their studies? Was it something that hindered them, or was it something they were able to adapt to?
Well, it seemed like they could adapt to it because, you know, you'd move into one school and you'd either be behind or ahead of them. So you just had to make your kids adjust to the situation, you know.
Yeah. Did you know there'd be this much traveling when you took the job?
Oh, yeah. I knew there was a lot of traveling, yeah. But I wasn't married then.
So you were married while you were traveling. How did you meet your wife?
Yeah. Well, I met her in Chillicothe, Missouri. She used to work for the Citizens State Bank in Chillicothe.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a bankers' convention, and these girls went out to this Triple H club in Chillicothe. I guess they wanted to dance. Mm-hmm. And my friend and I just happened to be out there having a beer. And he said, well, why don't you go and ask one of those girls to dance? So I said, okay, I'll go up and ask him. Well, I don't know why I picked Jean out of the four girls sitting in the booth, but I asked her to dance, but she turned me down. So I went back and sat down with Andy, and then we sat there a little while, and he said, well, why don't you go try again? So I tried again. This time she danced with me.
Yeah.
So I took her out on the dance floor and done the light shuffle with her and looked in her green eyes, and that's all it took.
Wow.
I fell in love right off the bat.
Part of mapping America means you're traveling America. That must have been difficult to newlyweds trying to convince the wife, the new bride, to go along, move every 30 to 60 days, go to a different town. What was that like on the family? They started having kids on the road. We're going to talk about that next. And really, the things we take for granted today when it comes to GPSs and maps, this is all based on the hard work of people like Charles Novak, our guest here tonight in the book Home is Everywhere, The Unbelievably True Story of One Man's Journey to Map America. We'll continue with him next on Overnight America, KMOX. Welcome back to Overnight America. Our guest is author Charles Novak. The book is Home is Everywhere, The Unbelievably True Story of One Man's Journey to Map America. It was his work that started in the 1940s that is still used today. Real fascinating story here. We find that he met his future wife right here in Missouri, get married, and then it was time to hit the road again. Was that a hard sell for her? You're traveling around the United States, you're moving, knowing that you're going to be leaving that town?
Well, if it was, she'd never admit it.
How long before you guys were married?
Oh, we got married in Christmas Eve.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So that was about 3 months.
3 months. What were her parents like? Did they warn her of a guy like you?
Yeah. I don't think they weren't very happy about it at the beginning, but then they got to like me before it was all over.
Yeah. How many years have you been married?
70.
Oh, congratulations. That's beautiful.
Well, that's a long time in the same life, right?
That's wonderful. That's just beautiful.
In today's world.
You know, she was traveling with you, going around. How many years were you guys traveling when you started having kids, or what? Did you start having kids immediately?
No, we were we got married when we were 19. And it was 23, about 4 years.
Yeah. Oh, married at 19. So, okay.
Yeah.
Wow. So you're traveling for a while, and you're learning a lot about the United States. You're probably meeting a lot of people in these different cities you're going to.
Oh, yeah. I really enjoyed it myself.
Yeah.
You know?
What was it like?
I come from a little town, and we never got out of town when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you get to meet different people from different parts of the country. That must be fascinating to learn, you know, what different people are like. I mean, the people in, San Francisco act different than the people here in St. Louis, for example. I'm sure you got to meet a lot of different types of people.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of it. But most people, see the Midwest, and they're very nice, mm-hmm. You know.
What were some of your favorite places?
Well, one of our favorite places is Dodge City, Kansas. Mm-hmm. I don't know. We just had a lot of fun there, and the kids enjoyed, going to Boot Hill and all that stuff. And I think that was probably one of the better places that we worked.
Yeah. Yeah. Now your kids are in their 60s. Is that right? Am I doing the math right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
My youngest daughter is 57. Mm-hmm. So the rest of them in their 60s.
Yeah. Pretty interesting career path to be able to go around and travel the country. When they got old enough, let's say they got 18, what happened to them after that point?
Well, when they got 18, when I moved to Kansas City, I was permanently there. We sold our trailer and bought a house. Mm-hmm. And then my kids went to Raytown, Missouri High School, grade schools.
So you were in Kansas City, you said?
Yeah, I was in Kansas City about 13 years, I guess.
It's kind of fascinating the way this could change your opinion on the way you look at America. If you just stay in one place, you might have the general impression of the world based on how you see it from that one place, but you've been able to see it from many different places. How has that shaped your view of America in general?
Well, people are friendly wherever you go. I never did see much difference, actually, because mm-hmm. I traveled mostly on the East Coast or the Midwest, and I think people are just basically the same. You know, they're nice. If you treat them good, they'll treat you good. Mm-hmm. So we never did have any problems with anybody. A lot of times you might meet somebody in one of these towns that's your good friend, when you leave.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I never had any problem. So I thought it's about the same from Texas to Minnesota,
Different temperatures, but still different nice people.
Yeah, different temperature, a little different different draws and stuff.
You ever work up in Montana during the winter?
No, I never was in Montana. Yeah. I was supposed to be just in the Midwest.
Yeah. So you write the book, Home is Everywhere, the unbelievably true story of one man's journey to map America. Why write a book about your stories?
Well, I thought it was what happened. My son David, he's written several books, and he thought I should write a book about my life because of my traveling to all these places, and so he hired a ghostwriter, and we started to write the book.
Figuring out the stories.
Started. It started out just to be a kind of a family affair, So people would know what their granddad was like when he was growing up and what he'd done. And then David, he got into it, and he liked the book. He thought we should publish it, so he made arrangements to get it published.
Do you own a trailer now?
No, I don't own a trailer.
No more trailer, no more moving across.
No more trailers, no.
No RVs, none of that.
No, I don't care.
You stay in one place.
I'm not much on sightseeing anymore.
Yeah, you've seen enough.
I've been all over the country from Alaska to Oregon to Virginia.
Yeah. It's funny because, it seems like we rely so much on GPS anymore, and we don't really stop and think about how that data works. How did they know this was here? How do they know where it is? You know, how do they map these things? And it's really fascinating to think, you know, we're talking about a lifetime worth of work, and many, many, many people have put their time and their sweat into this to make this beautiful network that everyone uses today. They can't figure out how to live without it. I mean, if you were to try to take someone under the age of 20 that just got their driver's license and ask them to read a map, I don't know if they'd be able to. Everything's reliant on the work that you guys set up.
Yeah, everything is GPS.
Yeah, and all of that is based off of the work you guys were doing.
Yeah, that's based off the latitude and longitude, you know. I didn't get involved in that much. Just before I retired, they run a test area out at the Bureau of Standards there in Gaithersburg, Maryland. And they were checking the accuracy for distance and et cetera. And at that time, the military, I think they had 5 or 7 mm-hmm. satellites up.
Yeah.
And that was about the only thing. It was all the satellites were in, up at that time.
Yeah.
And I remember you had to have a special code to even hook onto that satellite before you could do your testing and stuff. Mm-hmm.
So I got to ask, because you've done a lot of traveling, do you ever see a Bigfoot while you're out there?
No.
No Bigfoots, okay.
I did see a few grizzly bears in Alaska.
Whoa, yeah, I bet you would see a lot of wildlife like that.
Yeah. I spent 3 seasons in Alaska, 4 months. So I spent 1 season on Nunavak Island, and then the rest of them on the mainland. That was before Alaska was a state.
Mm. Did you ever catch any of the northern lights up there?
No.
I would love to see that sometime in my life. It just looks phenomenal, the photos. Well, Charles Novak, you wrote the book, Home is Everywhere, the unbelievably true story of one man's journey to map America. If people want to check it out, where can they find it?
Well, you can find it in bookstores, Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
You can go online and find the book.
Do people email you updates on how it's doing on Amazon?
I think they sold about maybe 500 books so far.
Yeah, so it's just started. I mean, it just came out this month.
Yeah, it just started. It's not really official out until the 26th, I believe.
Oh, is that right? So they're pre-ordering them. That's great.
They're pre-ordered. Yeah, pre-ordering.
Oh, excellent. Well, that's good numbers. That's awesome. You know, it's fun to read about these things and learn about the history of some very important people that have, you know, shaped the things that we take for granted today. And it seems like this is one of those stories. Home is Everywhere, the unbelievably true story of one man's journey to map America. Charles Novak, had a pleasure. Thank you for joining us here on Overnight America.
Well, I appreciate the time you spent with me.
Oh. He joins us on the Quiver River Electric guest line. A nice gentleman working and doing his thing in the 40s all the way up until now. It's amazing how some of these jobs that you had no idea were going on are the things that shape something that are essential to how we do everything today. Can't imagine life going back without a GPS. Well, I can't imagine it, but it's so much easier with it. It's so much easier. All right, that'll about do it for us here on Overnight America. If you would like to listen back to any of the show, including our first hour where we talked about the Better Together update, if you missed any of that, get it on the podcast. There's a link at KMOX.com. But if you have a smartphone, you have a podcast app built into it, an iPhone or an Android. But if you don't know if you have one, you can always download the radio.com app and search for Overnight America right there. You'll be able to get your hands onto it, into your smartphone, listen to it at your convenience. And best of all, you listen to it all for free. No charge to you. We do it because we love you. Enjoy the rest of your night. We'll be back again later tonight after Blues hockey. Go Blues. We'll see you later.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.